This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulch & Ford. Bird, Kulch & Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
And welcome into the Bearcast on this Tuesday, September the 10th, 2024. I'm Craig Smoke, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver. And if you are tuning in live on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page, of which we encourage you to hit that like and subscribe button whenever you are checking out that page, you may be catching us a little bit late because, surprise, surprise, we are starting at 11 a.m. as opposed to 11:15 a.m. on the YouTube page. And that is just a slight change that we will be making starting this week. Sorry for no advance notice, really, but just a minor thing that should be easy to accommodate moving forward. But for what it's worth, if you catch this and you re-listen to it and you're like, wait, what did I miss? Where did this start? Well, we started a little bit early, so from here on out, every week, Tuesdays at 11 a.m. flat on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page is where you can find us. So just a programming note right off the top as we get started here. And as we get started, we are going to dive right into Baylor and Utah, a 23-12 loss for the Bears to move them to 1-1 on the year. And we will get into that. Also look ahead to what is going to be a thematic experience this weekend at McLean Stadium. A lot of like dressing on this game, new uniforms, honoring old teams, and just a lot of stuff that'll be occurring around the game against the Falcons coming up on Saturday. And we'll also get into your mailbag and a little bit of Big 12 talk towards the end of the show, depending on how much time we have. But that's what we got for you. Garrett Ross behind the scenes as well. And, well, we knew Utah would be tough, Grayson, but how tough was it compared to what you were expecting and your thoughts on them coming out of this loss on Saturday, which we'll dive further into in just a moment?
Well, I was lucky enough or unlucky enough to go to the game this weekend, so I was able to watch it in person and kind of get a feel for the environment and also just kind of, you know, what we saw on the field and how Utah's defense performed and how Baylor, you know, performed as a team. I think in general, you know, we're going to talk a lot about this game, but I think this was one of those games that we pretty much all thought Utah was going to win. I mean, not many people picked Baylor here. They were more than a 2-touchdown dog in this game. And, you know, the result was Baylor lost by 11 points. And I feel like there's been a lot of reaction from this game and a lot of, I'm not going to say overreaction, because I understand that some of it is warranted, but I also think that in reality here, of all the teams that we've seen in Big 12, in the Big 12 so far this year, Utah has by far looked the most impressive and they've looked like the most complete team so far in the conference.
I'll be honest with you, I have read basically or listened, I've shut my brain off to basically anything other than just kind of the guys in the studio when it comes to the Baylor game, because I know how I saw it and I don't really want to have that spoiled by just a lot of the negativity that I imagine is out there because they lost their first game. So I know it's probably out there. I'm just not going to do what we did last year and get too bogged down in, like, and I say we just in general, of like every loss is like the death of a child or something, you know, like it's like everything's like so over emotional, and I am taking a totally different approach this year. And I expect, like, I wrote this and I you know, just said that's how I feel, is like I expected this all along. So barring them getting beat 60-0, this is what I expected to be sitting here talking about, was a Utah win in Salt Lake City. So it was a Utah win in Salt Lake City. Could have made it closer, could have performed better, but I don't know. I'm just not overreacting to what we saw on Saturday, because it's actually slightly better in some ways than what I expected, and it's worse in some ways, but it's about where I thought this team would be, and I don't blame people for thinking, like, yeah, they let an opportunity to get an upset go, but I don't know. This game was never really all that close, even though they were within 11 points.
Right, and I mean, teams don't win in Salt Lake City. I don't know how many times we had to make that clear. Like, they don't lose. They've lost 3 times since 2018. I mean, this is just what it is. And honestly, you know, when I was going through the matchups, only 6 times have they just won by a single score as well. So it's like teams don't even compete there, really. And I felt like Baylor competed. I know, you know, the Cam Rising injury played a role in this. I think if he had been healthy, Utah maybe wins by a little bit more. But I still think the approach would have been the same from Utah, in which they were going to run the football, try to run the clock out, try to keep Baylor off the field, and then just go home with a win. That's what they do. So I don't know that a ton would have changed. But I think if you're a Baylor fan and you're kind of looking at it from just, oh, where they were last year to where they are this year, for them to go on the road, only lose by 11, and really they gave away some points, you know, really 13 points they just gave to Utah with the fumble and then, of course, the special teams touchdown. Like, you get rid of those plays, and, I mean, Baylor's defense was really good. And I think that, in general, I think coming away from this game, I'm sitting here going, okay, there are some things Baylor obviously is not good at and has to work on, but there are also some things that lead me to believe that, hey, you know, looking around the Big 12, you know, Baylor's going to be competitive against a lot of these teams.
Yeah, I wrote it in a last couple of articles that I've written that, including the one yesterday, that they can beat every team on the schedule that's left. And they can. I don't know how many people watch how much Big 12 football, but I've watched a lot, and I've read a lot about it, and I've talked a lot about it. There's not a team remaining they can't beat if they play their best game. They could also lose to every single one of them as well. But who's better than Utah that they're going to play?
Yeah, no one. The only one that is really like, ooh, is Iowa State, obviously. Yeah, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's in Ames, and they just got a nice win that was at the very end of the game, and so I wasn't expecting them to go win in Ames this year anyway. So, surprise, they went and lost in Salt Lake City. Thought that was going to be the case. We'll see. You know, this whole feeling that we're talking about can change on a dime if they don't show up this weekend. Like, that's what this is contingent upon. But, yeah, in terms of this game, if you're expecting a freak out over the first loss, you're just not going to find it here. I'm sure there's other places that will have that for you, other places on this site that will probably have that for you, a thread here and there. But this podcast is not going to be freaking out over what we saw on Saturday, even though there is, you know, stuff to criticize or stuff to, you know, not be happy with. So let's dive into what those things might be. And there's a lot of punts in this game, so I don't want to, like, again, do every drive, but we'll try and get as much into this as we can and see how we feel on the other side after having revisited this. So we'll talk Utah and then get into everything else that you need to know, including a big weekend of home festivities. So we come out of this in Salt Lake City with a nice sunshiny Saturday. What was the weather like in Utah?
Just beautiful. I mean, it was hot. It was, you know, I thought I was leaving
by the end of the game,
Texas.
That was a story.
Right. It was like 90 degrees. By the end, it got a little cooler, but yeah, it was hot.
Yeah, it seemed like guys were cramping, and it started to become an issue towards the end of the game. But nice sunny day as we approach fall here. You can feel the change in the air, but still hot out there. And so that was part of the atmosphere, and the Utes very good at home, very good under Kyle Whittingham, and very veteran-laden, and we'd see that pretty early on. But first, we'd see Baylor get a stop on the opening series of the game. Utes get the ball first and are probably hoping to go drive it down the field, and instead able to get a few yards here and there, but ultimately are forced to punt after picking up just one first down. So a nice stop by the Baylor defense, which then gives them the ball and an opportunity to go and drive down the field on their first offensive drive and really go make a statement. But that was not in the cards, as they would quickly go three and out. Richard Reese run for three, and Ashton Hawkins run for a negative one loss. And then on third and eight, a theme of the day, incomplete pass from Daquan Finn. And we'll get into that element of this game as we move along. Feel free to interject when you have thoughts on any of this, but trading series to start off with. So then it wasn't long before we actually got into the scoring, and this ramped up pretty quickly. Just a few minutes in, Utah's second possession, they get the ball back. A nice drive from Utah, a nice quick drive that would put them on the board 7-0. A short pass to Dorian Singer, another pass to Dallin Bentley, picks up a first down. Micah Bernard runs for three. Cam Rising goes for the pass, but a penalty on Caden Jenkins, so enforced at the spot. Penalty, automatic first down. They are now within, they're now inside the Baylor 30, and then on first and 10, Money Parks is money on the pass from Cam Rising, 28-yard touchdown following the penalty, and it is 7-0. So here we go. It's the Utes up front, and how will the Bears respond to their first, I guess, punch that dazed them of the day?
Yeah, and I would say, so the first drive, yes, Baylor got a stop. They also got very lucky because Dorian Singer had about a, I think it was like a 50-yard throw by Rising that he should have caught for a touchdown for Utah. So I think this all came back to what Dave Aranda talked about after the game, just that they did not start off well, really on either side of the ball. There were a lot of things that they were doing that I guess he didn't expect from the group. And also just, I think they came into this game expecting to make a statement and really wanting to make a statement and maybe put that all ahead of executing. And I think we saw that early in the game with the defensive lapses, the pass interference, like you mentioned, a couple big explosive plays in the passing game and opportunities for Utah in the passing game. And then, of course, the offense just coming out and really just not being able to settle at all. And part of it was the pass rush, which we're about to get to. Another part of it was the inability to run the football. And then also, I felt like the Baylor staff didn't really have confidence that the offensive line was going to hold up too long, at least initially. Things settled down, but at the start, it really felt like things were kind of trending in the wrong direction.
So it's 7-0 Utah after a couple of drives. Baylor gets the ball back. Daquan Finn sacked for a loss of 22. He fumbles, and it is recovered by Utah. And so, boom, huge play right at the start of this drive. As pressure gets to Finn, and he can't hang on to the football. And granted, he got blindsided. I mean, he could have gotten hurt pretty easily. I don't think that hit was as flush as it could have been because he was just totally unprotected and hit from his blind side. So I don't really fault him. He got to hang on to the football. You know, we say that, but he got, I mean, it could have been way worse. It really could have. He was very fortunate, actually, that wasn't a worse hit. But he gets nailed, ball drops, and Utah picks it up or recovers it. And one play later, they score. And it is a Cam Rising pass to Micah Bernard from just 2 yards out, and it is 14-0. Boom, just like that. So touchdown, fumble, touchdown, and this is exactly what you did not want to have happen early on, and it's only getting started here.
And this is exactly how you just completely hand the game to especially a team at home. I mean, you can't give up essentially a defensive touchdown. I mean, I know they had to score from 3 yards out, but they were always going to score from 3 yards out, and so this is just tough because this automatically makes the offense think, okay, we need to get the ball out quickly. We need to you know, get creative, try to get the ball out of Finn's hands as quickly as possible because you're giving up free runners at your quarterback to start the football game. I mean, that's just hard to really explain. And I know it was a in motion, Kelsey Johnson coming in motion. I know that you had Alvin Ebisele at left tackle. Alvin went for the DT, and then Kelsey came across, and it seemed like that was Kelsey's block. And so there's a lot of theories to this. I felt like Kelsey was surprised at how quickly the snap went, and I don't think he was able to get to his block in time. But secondly, I didn't feel like Kelsey really put in, you know, really kind of tried to do anything, really, to at least touch him or nudge him or anything. He just watched him run by, and Connor O'Toole, who was a Baylor target at one time during his career, he goes in, makes a huge game-changing play.
Yep, and so it was on after that of you know, as far as on, a feeling of, uh-oh, here we go. It's 14-0. It's like 8 minutes into the game, if even that at that point. Yeah, I think less than that at that point. So you were, you know, just right in the start of this thing, and you're already dodging bullets, basically, and not effectively, as you would get the ball back. And Dawson Pendergrass, loss of one on the run, as they had no running game early on. And that is a theme in, what, like 6 of 8 quarters thereabouts, as basically having no run game. I know that would be more encouraging later on, but that is certainly an Achilles heel for them. So anyways, loss of one. Daquan Finn gets a short gain to Monterey Baldwin, throws an incompletion on third down, and it is drive over. Palmer Williams, who would be like part MVP on the day, special teams MVP for sure, had a huge day booming punts, and he connects in the altitude 60 yards off his foot for a nice flip of the field. And you know, that was a bright spot from the day. I did make mention, because I just think it's important, is Kyle Whittingham did say after the game that, like, yeah, he was booming punts, but like, he was out kicking their coverage teams. And so It's a great weapon to have, but that's also something that I just keep saying, like, to be mindful of, because that's not always a good thing if you outkick your guys, because he was saying, like, we should have hit them for big plays. We just couldn't draw it up and like effectively do it, but we're like gawking over the numbers, and he's going, we should have busted their butts for that. So just something like special teams wise, that's great, but you got to kind of corral it a little bit in certain situations. And I know they'll be fine with that, but just worth noting.
Yeah. I think in this particular matchup, it was more about just trying to send Utah as far back as possible, regardless of what you're giving up in the return game. Just, I mean, they really, especially early on, like we've mentioned, all these things going wrong. Field position was going wrong early as well. Utah was starting in great field position, despite really good punts from Palmer Williams, because Baylor just wasn't going anywhere. And so I think that was kind of the theory there, but you're exactly right. I mean, it did give Utah opportunities, but for Baylor's sake, at least, they were able to kind of, you know, snuff those opportunities out and then also create the big opportunities with Palmer Williams' boot.
Yeah, you're hoping to make them drive the field, and he was able to do that. So they get the ball back, and they would go 10 plays, 74 yards, would pick up a few first downs here, converted a second and 13, converted a third and one, and then on third and eight, Cameron Rising only gets 2 yards to Dorian Singer as they were at the Baylor 14-yard line. So they had driven down the field, punt be damned, and had no problem doing that, and get finally stopped inside the 15-yard line. They settle for a 30-yard field goal, so they still get points. It's 17-0, and we are just at the tail end of the first quarter, so it was a pretty bad frame, and exactly what you couldn't do in the opening stretch to try to give yourself much of a chance to win this football game.
Exactly, and that was a 6-minute drive. So Utah was able to really take some time off the clock, go down, kick a field goal, and I think still at this time, Baylor does not have a first down. I think that's going to last for a little bit longer as well. It was tough. Just being in the stadium, there was no momentum. No really life on the Baylor side of things at this point. And they just really needed something to flip. And so you move forward and you're like, okay, how are they going to create something offensively? Well, that wasn't going to happen, at least in the first half, until we get to the very end.
Yeah, I mean, this was a game where it looked like this was about to be like 50-0 after the first quarter. So I could understand if it stayed that way. Now, I know the Cam Rising injury, we'll get to all that, whatever, but I can understand if it would have stayed on this trajectory and then you came out of this just like, this program is finished, like, this is not working. I could have understood that, but I think by the end of it, I felt differently than after the first quarter of the first half, but it was an abysmal start, and they'll lose a lot of games if they start like this, not just against Utah, and that has to change, but it could have been worse, and this is evidence. It could have been like this the entire time, and maybe it would have been if Cam Rising didn't get hurt, but I don't know. This is just a bad start in general, regardless of how you want to look at it. So 17-0, Baylor gets the ball back, do nothing with it, another three and out, as Richard Reese, you know, 6-yard run, 1-yard run, loss of one, just boom, drive over with, three carries, go nowhere, can't even pick up a first down. Palmer Williams, another 51-yard punt, as he had a huge day. I mean, he absolutely had a huge day. He was not the Big 12 Special Teams Player of the Week, but he was honored, you know, mentioned in some other special teams, I guess, hits, you know, across the web and sites that track that kind of thing. He was somebody that got a little bit of mention, so that was good to see. But they did force Utah to punt the football on the following drive. Got a stop. That was a big deal. Just 5 plays, 30 yards. Get around midfield. Baylor gets the ball back. 3 and out. Richard Reese, run for 2. Ashton Hawkins, run for nothing. Daquan Finn, pass incomplete. Boom, here's Palmer Williams again. 76-yard punt. They down it at the Utah 2-yard line. So a huge swing of field position there for Palmer Williams, and that's why he had such a big day, making them drive the field, and it would be effective, as Utah would have to start at their 2, and they would go 3 and out themselves, not able to move the football, run for nothing, run for 5, and then Trevin Maye and Garmin Randolph combined for a sack of Cam Rising to end the drive, and they've got Utah backed up inside their own 10, so that was great. That was all Palmer Williams getting that started, and the defense playing well, so okay, you've limited the damage somewhat, got a couple stops, and then it's all hell about to break loose again here. So you get the ball back, and you were able to drive it into field goal territory. A lot of Dawson Pendergrass just picking up like 4 and 5 at a time. Daquan Finn can't complete a pass, though, to kind of like take this another another step. So it was a lot of running the football. Richardson got involved. We hadn't seen much of him, but Dominic Richardson with a run of three, Daquan Finn a run of three, then a false start penalty, which was not ideal. And just, it's like things are going well. You're moving the ball, and it's like, oh, here we go. Like, get a false start, you know, to really bring this thing to a halt or back it up. And so that was a... That was not fun, and it's about to get a lot less fun.
Right, and just keep in mind here, Baylor was going to go for this on 4th and 4.
Yeah.
Before the false start penalty. They were lined up. They were going to go for it on 4th and 4. Maybe they don't get it, whatever. Maybe they do get it, though. And instead, you end up with this result.
Yep, so you're lining up the Utah 27. You get a false start. You decide, all right, we're down 17-0. Let's go ahead and just take the points. Because it's 4th and 9, and Lord knows you're not feeling great about like running the football for 10. And you're not feeling great about your quarterback right now because he's got a lot of incompletions that he's racked up here in these first few series. So you decide to kick the ball, and it turns into an absolute disaster for you as I don't know what the actual breakdown was, but basically Utah defenders on either side of Garrison Grimes just like hopped over and around him in between he and the guards. And, like, they were running hurdles or something. And then you had Caleb Lohner, the former Baylor basketball player, who was, like, a few steps behind. And he's just jumping up, like, vertically straight to try to provide, you know, a block and a further distraction. And I can imagine, like, that's really smart to have the big basketball player with the long reach out there. He didn't tip it. The other guys who just ran right past Garrison Grimes did. So, again, I don't know, like, what all happened to why they were able to run so freely. But an easy block for Utah on the field goal attempt. And if that wasn't bad enough, it bounces right into the hands of Tao Johnson, who scoops it up and runs it 77 yards, high-fiving his teammate on the way down, adding insult to injury. And what was going to maybe be some points for the Bears is instead a huge special teams touchdown for the Utes. It's 23-0, just like that. And this was the low point of the game for sure. This was clearly like the, oh God, this is going to be as bad as we hoped it wouldn't be.
Right. And this was also the moment where it's like, oh, I think that's ball game.
Oh,
like,
yeah, regardless, for sure. Like, Baylor, it actually was the ball game.
Baylor was going to need like two turnovers to even come close to getting back in this game. That's just what it felt like. It felt insurmountable at that point. I know Baylor makes a run here in the second half, but that's just the way it felt in the stadium and just kind of watching the flow of the game. It felt like even if Baylor was able to rebound, they dug too deep of a hole. And this was something Randa talked about all offseason, starting fast, starting strong. They did not in this one at all.
Yeah, they had the opposite effect in a big game on the road. And that's something like the psychology of this team is just like it's – I know it's a lot more complicated than just like flipping a light switch, but it's like you don't get – like, what is that balance of, like, getting up for a game and embracing the moment but not, like, hyperventilating or getting too – and, like, they can't find that balance. Like, they don't show up well in big games, and games you don't think they will show up, they do. But it's – like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just I don't feel like they should have gone into this game feeling any pressure other than, like, it's going to be tough, but – you're 17. What, I don't even know what it was by the end of it, but they were
14
like –
14 and a half.
Okay, 14 and a half. But I think at one point, like, it – but you were, like – 15-point underdogs for the majority of the week on the road in a place where visiting teams don't win. Like, what are you – there's no expectation for you.
Right.
Like, nobody's expecting you to win this game. Just go play football. But they clearly, you know, had a bad reaction to just having that pressure, I guess, based on what he had to say. But that's they've got to figure that out, man. All right, so Utah – gets the big special teams touchdown. Baylor gets the ball back. 5 plays. They're punting again. They weren't punting. They went for it on 4th down, but Richard Reese, no gain. Daquan Finn goes for Hal Presley, but it's a pass interference. So automatic 1st down. You got 1st and 10 at your own 40, but run for 1, run for 2, run for 4, and then go for it on 4th and 3. And Daquan Finn just not accurate on the day, and just the passing game was a process throughout, and they turned the ball over on downs around midfield. So not great. Utah gets the ball back, 9 plays. They go just 20 yards and a little bit of a break as at this point Cam Rising gets hit near the sidelines on a run. He ends up hurting his hand. Trevin Maia, the one pursuing him out of bounds. I've watched it a few times. Like, I can see where you think he, like, gave him a nudge, but I also don't think he was, like, overly dirty the way that that Utah fans took it. I thought it was kind of in the middle. Like, he was, yeah, he was being a defender, hitting a quarterback out of bounds. He wasn't going to just let Cam Rising make a pass play at the sideline like he was looking like he was attempting
to
do.
Well, he did and then got called for intentional grounding, but to be clear, I don't think that it was a dirty hit.
Yeah.
It definitely should have been a flag, though. Like, Baylor got very lucky that that wasn't called, because what they did call was grounding on Rising.
Right.
It was a late hit, in my eyes. Like, the shove was enough where I feel like most times quarterbacks get that.
Oh, call. They definitely most of the time get that. I didn't blame them for not calling it there, because I didn't think it was, like, an egregious, like, Utah fans were treating it. But, you know, I don't.
Yeah, not dirty. Yeah. Not. I don't believe it was dirty, but I do believe it was worth a flag, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's totally fine. But, yeah, I didn't think it was worth, like, oh, he's a dirty player, and he's this or that. But, yeah, that definitely gave him a little bit of a nudge there going out of bounds. So Cam Rising gets up, and he's hurt. Here comes Isaac Wilson, the brother of Zach Wilson, the Utah backup quarterback, and he's not able to do much. Little gain here and there, but ultimately Utah is forced into a field goal down at the Baylor 27-yard line. And, you know, who knows here? They might have scored a touchdown if Rising had stayed in the game, but instead they do end up going for the field goal with just 30 seconds left before the half. And and what would be a theme of the day for Utah, they missed the field goal attempt from 45 yards out, Cole Becker. So Cam Rising's hurt. He's out. Isaac Wilson's in, and they missed the field goal attempt. So, yeah, just a big change in events here on this drive for Utah and the rest of this game.
It definitely was, and it felt like, okay, like, this is nice momentum. Cam Rising, maybe he's not going to play in the second half. They miss a field goal. Oh, okay, you know, maybe Baylor can go down and actually score some points here really quickly and, you know, maybe gain at least a little momentum going into the second half.
And they were able to get a little something, 30 seconds left on the clock, and they're able to drive it down and actually connect and get some points on the board. A 44-yard field goal from Isaiah Hankins as Daquan Finn ran for 7, hit Hal Presley for 18, hit Michael Trigg for 6 more, and then you had the big targeting call, which was like moments after Utah fans claimed that Trevin Maia tried to murder Cam Rising on the sideline. He had a far dirtier hit and an ejection upon further review, but as I mentioned in one of my columns, I didn't see much complaining about that that dirty play, but that was far and away a dirtier play than what happened.
That was a complete launch.
Oh, yeah, like, dude, it was complete. So much dirtier. That's why Utah fans are full of it. It was because, like, this happened moments later, and it's just like, oh, I don't remember that happening right after that, but, yeah, not even close. He's ejected, and so it leads to all of that, some extra yardage, and Isaiah Hankins having that opportunity to make it from 44. So at halftime, it is 23-3. Could have been worse because they might, you know, Cam Rising might have been healthy, and they score a touchdown, and it's like 30-0 at halftime. But instead, it's 23-3, and you were able to put some points on the board right at the end to just give you something to hang on to at halftime. But other than that, it did not feel great at this point.
So this is a super just, it doesn't make sense type of drive. And it happens in the NFL all the time where I know teams are playing off coverage. They're not trying to give up explosive plays. But, like, this was the best that Daquan Finn looked, by and large, throwing the football. And it's a 30-second drive. You're going really quickly. You're going up tempo. They hit a corner route to Hal Presley on the drive. You hit Michael Trigg kind of on a short gain where you're just giving Daquan Finn a layup type throw. Just like, I don't know why they don't create more of these throughout the game. I mean, I feel like some of these opportunities are at least there, but either way, it was a nice drive. Nice to see Baylor at least go get some points. And I will say at halftime at this moment, there was some momentum, I feel like, for Baylor and from Baylor fans just kind of looking at as, you know, Isaac Wilson might turn the ball over a couple times. Maybe Baylor can capitalize on some mistakes and maybe, you know, put together a really big comeback, kind of similar to what they did against UCF a year ago.
And then they came out and went 3-and-out on their opening drive and lost 6 yards as on 3rd and 10, Daquan Finn is sacked for a loss of 6 by Connor O'Toole. So that's what they did with that momentum they got right before the half was they went and went 3-and-out to start the next series, but also got a stop, 3-and-out on Utah. Baylor gets the ball back, 11 plays, 70 yards drive as we'll start to wind it up here. Makes it 23-6. A lot of Dawson Pendergrass and a little bit of a lot of others, but a lot of Dawson Pendergrass, some Daquan Finn, some Monterey Baldwin, some Ashton Hawkins, all those guys getting touches on this drive, and Isaiah Hankins, who was money, didn't really talk about him much, but a 39-yarder, so a couple of big kicks from him to make it 23-6 in the middle of the third quarter.
Yeah, 46-yard run by Dawson Pendergrass. Mm-hmm. Really, and it was very well blocked. Omar Egbedian put together a great block, created a huge hole, and Pendergrass took off, got a huge gain, and really, I think that was the only run that Baylor had that was over, like, maybe 12 yards on the day.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of changed the numbers of the running game. Yeah. It immensely changed. They did look better running the ball in the third quarter, but like, how much of that is applicable to next week, and, like, can you consistently do that?
I think it was more the one part of the run game that did look better was the design stuff for Finn. That's something that I do feel like is maybe transferable, but you're right. The base running, it is skewed by that run.
Yeah, and, I mean, I did feel like they were running harder, and they were getting more yards on more carries. It wasn't like one and two and one and two. It was, you know, they were chipping away a little bit more, and you could feel the momentum kind of starting to, like, okay, like, it's long odds they can do get stops and enough scores because it's so hard to score, but at least there's, like, a little something to this. So they'd force a Utah punt, get the ball back, 8 plays, 70 yards, some Dominic Richardson, some Daquan Finn on the running side of things here, picking up a big first down on a 3rd and 7, picking up 7 a little bit later to create a 3rd and 1, which was then a 4th and 1, of which then Daquan Finn picks that up, and then on 1st and 10 hits Josh Cameron for a huge run after the catch. This was Cameron making a play, and boom, touchdown, just like that. It's 23-12. They go for the 2-point conversion and can't convert, which would have made it a 9-point game, but a huge play from Josh Cameron, and they really needed that, and so just nice to see them string a drive together, and now you're starting to wonder, like, okay, well, the time, huh, like, maybe it's possible. You're not getting your hopes up, but it's feasible, at least at this point.
Yeah, 2 straight 70-yard drives. I mean, that's really good, and that's what I'm talking about. By once they settled in, they were actually able to create some offense, and I felt like a lot of it, truthfully, was because they were kind of leaning into Daquan Finn on more design quarterback runs. I think that did help settle down the whole offense. It allowed them to pick up first downs, and also just, frankly, allowed them to create at least a little explosiveness in the offense, because they really didn't have much of that on the day.
So they needed to force a punt. They did. 6 plays. Utah's forced to punt as you make Isaac Wilson try to throw the ball a little bit. Unfortunately, you can't do anything with it. This was your opportunity. You had these two series coming up if you really wanted to make this an interesting game, but you go 3 and out, a false start penalty on 4th and 4, made it a 4th and 9. Palmer Williams with a 79-yard punt, but it's a touchback, so that really – didn't help you all that much, the 79 yards, but, you know, still just crazy. His numbers were crazy, and he was booming it, and so that was ridiculous.
This was the one that bounced towards the corner and just barely touched the pylon, or else it was going to be out at, you know, the half-inch line.
It would have been incredible.
It was an incredible boot.
But the touchback wipes out the feel-good vibes of how long that was and what it could have done for you. It's still great, but just yeah, you were that close to, like, really, really, really cool moment. But instead, it goes out of bounds. And, so Baylor punts. And then it was the drive of death for you as far as this game goes. Utah gets the ball back, and you needed to get a stop here, but you could not get a stop. They convert a 2nd and 13 into a first down, a 2nd and 5 into a first down, a 3rd and 3 into a first down. They go on 4th and 6. And finally, Baylor calls a timeout. As the end of this drive, they've just been grinding clock and grinding clock and grinding yardage. And after the timeout, they line up for a 43-yard field goal, but miss. So there's another opening, but the unfortunate part of this drive took so long and so much off the clock, and you still need 2 scores that, with the way the offense was playing, like, it was an impossibility, basically. Yeah. You would have had to have hit a Josh Cameron play, like, on the first play, got a stop, got the ball back, and then hit another type of Josh Cameron play. So this drive didn't end up in points, but it basically ended the game for all intents and purposes, because less than 4 minutes to go, and you're down by 12. That was a 2nd Utah miss. If they were looking for negatives, that was definitely one of them, was their kicking unit. They are able to stop Baylor on the next drive on downs, as the Bears are trying to score quickly, but just unable to do so. They get to around midfield, and it kind of just all peters out from there as Daquan Finn on, you know, the fourth down and long is only able to hit like 6 yard gain for Richard. I think feel like they could have done a little bit better there on the, but I mean, it didn't matter, right? Because there's less than 2 minutes to go in the game. So fourth and 14, Richard Reese gets brought down, and that is for all intents and purposes, the end of the game. So there you go. 23-12, had some opportunities there in the second half to make it interesting, but just couldn't string enough together. And that long Utah drive there at the end, which was 11 plays, 65 yards, and wiped out 7.5 minutes nearly off the clock. That was the death knell ultimately for them and the start of the game. That was really the death knell early on. That set them up for failure, but they needed just a couple more plays and couldn't get it. But there you go. There was your game, 23-12. Definitely some ways you can look at that and feel like it could have been way worse. Definitely could have been way better. And you go back to the drawing board and now get ready for Air Force.
I mean, it certainly is disappointing that the way the defense played, particularly after that initial drive or two, for them to come in late in the game and just not be able to get off the field, it was very disappointing to see that. They got out-physicaled. It's one of those things where, you know, all offseason we talked about, you know, Baylor needed to start strong and then they needed to finish game strong. And they did neither in this one. So that, I think, is the biggest disappointment coming out of this game. I think they really did miss Cooper Lands on that last drive as well. He went out early in the game with an ankle injury, so they didn't quite have the depth on the defensive line late, and I think it caught up to them a little bit. So yeah, that was a big part of it. I think in general, though, you come out of this game thinking, you know, Baylor's defense is probably pretty good. I feel okay about saying that, and Baylor's offense has a long way to go. I think that's kind of where I'm at this stage.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. I mean, the defense has potential. I think that they definitely fought hard. They were handed a bad deal with some of those points early on, and I don't think you put that on them. But you're not good enough to make errors in special teams and get kicks blocked and run back for touchdowns. Like, you're just going to lose games every time stuff like that's happening, because I don't think you're good enough in the other areas to accommodate the or to overcome some of those types of mistakes. So that first quarter, that block kick touchdown, I mean, that's how you lose a road game against a really good team, and they still had chances but just couldn't string enough together. Yeah, like, is the offense going to be able to do enough, or was this Utah's defense? Like, we don't really know. Daquan Finn was not good, and I think it was, like Aranda said, a combination of nerves but also just inaccuracy. Mm-hmm. So that's just part of his game. Like, he's going to be inaccurate sometimes, even if it looks like the easiest pass in the world, and it's going to be untimely, and that was certainly the case on occasion on Saturday. I'll just say, like, he just needs to be better, though. Like, if they want to win that game, he has to be better. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a criticism as much as, like, if you want to win that game, your starting quarterback has to play better than he played on Saturday. Just, it's really that simple. If he can play better, if the offense can get off to a better start, if they can, like, there's a lot of ifs with this team, and there's 10 games to go, so we'll see if they're able to do a lot of these things. But you can see, like, the positive trajectory this can go on, but you can also see where it can be, like, that first quarter mm-hmm. for a bunch of the frames remaining the rest of this year. And it's just going to be up to them to figure out which version they're going to be any given Saturday.
Right. Now, I think one thing that Finn, the biggest area that is troubling with the way Finn has played so far, is when he has been given a clean pocket, they haven't been able to capitalize. Mm-hmm. And that can be on Finn, that can be on the receivers, that can be on the play calling, it can be on a number of things. But in general, that's where Baylor is not getting it done. When things are blocked, they're not able to take advantage of that. And they have to. I felt like last year, you know, they were able to take advantage of those situations at times when things were blocked, which things were never blocked last year. And so I think that's a big part of it. If you're not going to be able to run the football, that's going to be a challenge in general. So I do think that's an area where I saw a little bit of improvement, just because we actually saw some of the quarterback run game actually be called, not just kind of stuff where he's, you know, improvising. I do think that's going to be a big factor as the season wears on. They're going to have to utilize that quarterback run game to move the football effectively. I will also say, last year we talked about inconsistent wide receiver play. Well, the wide receivers combined for 4 catches in this game. That's just not good enough. You had 2 for Cameron, 1 for Presley, 1 for Monre Baldwin. They got to have more than that from that group.
Yep, so a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, some ugly as well. I outlined, I think, all of that in my weekly column on Monday, the good, the bad, the ugly, so you can check that out for a little bit of everything, and there certainly was a little bit of everything from this game. It looked like it was going to be a whole lot of just the ugly, but they were able to fill in some of the other columns, the good side of things, as that game progressed. So now what does this all mean? Now they go on to face the Air Force Falcons at McLean Stadium on Saturday. The last time we saw Air Force, it was the coldest bowl game in history, literally, and Air Force beat up the Bears 30-15 in the most miserable of conditions. They embraced it. The Bears, I mean, that was just a very forgettable and low point of the Dave Aranda tenure. Walking out of the stadium that night, playing at your rival stadium, first of all, was insulting. But to do so when it's a severe weather event, you can't even enjoy being outside. And then you get beat up and you lose the game to end the season 6-7. Like, it was one of the lowest points, I feel like, in terms of just like all these things coming together on the field. It was just a bad ending to a season, and it kind of set the ball rolling to what it's been like for the last year and a half, honestly. Because you finished 6-7 instead of 7-6, and you lost in TCU's field, and it was just embarrassing. And so that was the last time we saw Air Force. It was 30-15 back then, but Blake Shapen was your quarterback. Squirrel Williams was running around. Jalen Ellis was your leading receiver that day with a catch for 57 yards. So there's a lot that's changed over since then, and that also includes for Air Force. A team that is a lot different from when you played them, vice versa, but still a team that you must respect going into this game, because to do otherwise would be foolish. They are 1-1 on the year. They beat Merrimack 21-6 in their opener and then lost 17-7 last week to San Jose State. So, Grayson, let's spend 5-10 minutes here on Air Force, and just what do you think about the Falcons heading into this one at McLean Stadium, a game that I would say is going to be the debut of the anthracite jerseys, mm-hmm. the all-black out-type uniforms for Baylor. They're going to unveil those. It is a national TV broadcast on FS1. It is a night game, and it is also the Salute to Service game. They're also going to have the Miracle on the Brazos represented with some players from that team being honored at the game. The uniforms also a nod to the 2013-2014 team, so a lot of like extra sauce on this game to kind of spice it up a little bit and hopefully make it an attraction for fans this weekend.
I mean, it definitely is going to be a huge attraction. I think the biggest thing when I think about this game is Baylor's had these opportunities over the last 2 years where the fans have showed up for the game, where all this kind of extra festivities have been taking place. And I feel like more times than not, Baylor has laid an egg in those situations the last couple times. And that can't happen. You know, ever since that Oklahoma game where they went on the road to Norman to win that game, which was a great win during the 2022 season, they've only won against two FBS teams since then. That's troubling. The only two wins were against Cincinnati and UCF. The other two wins that they have during that time frame were against Tarleton and Long Island. So two FBS wins, and neither of those were at home. This feels like an opportunity for Baylor. This feels like a situation where Baylor needs to take advantage of an Air Force team that is simply not nearly as good as they have been the last three or so years. This has been a very consistent program, but this year, they are not that good. I mean, beating Merrimack 21-6, and I believe Merrimack lost the next week to an FCS team, so that's not really all that impressive. Then they turned around against San Jose State at home, and really, you know, they lost by double digits.
The SCS team was a future Big 12 squad, UConn.
Yeah,
who they lost to 63-17.
Exactly. This is just not a very good Air Force team. They don't quite have an identity. They lost so many guys from a year ago, and they're really trying to recreate some of the magic that they've had in the past. I don't think they've figured that out yet. And so, yeah, you can't take them lightly because, yes, they run the triple option. Yes, it can, you know, things can go sideways in a hurry. But Dave Aranda's even mentioned since the offseason, they've been preparing for this game. Since the offseason, they've been prepared for the triple option. He feels like that gives them an advantage. He said that in the press conference this week. Now they got to go out and show it. And they're going to have opportunities on defense to put together a elite performance. They have a chance here to, in my eyes, hold Air Force under 10 points. They could definitely do that. And offensively, it's an opportunity to get back on track and really gain momentum as you're going to need to score some points in future weeks, including the game against Colorado. You're going to have to be able to score some in that one. So I think this feels like a get-right week, but it also feels like a week that Baylor has not been able to take advantage of over the last 2 years.
Yeah, the blackout's not being called a blackout, but it's part of their mission, Black Ops. They're doing the whole Air Force type of theme here, so you're going to have a jet fly over. You're going to have these blackout uniforms that aren't officially blackout. They're anthracite, but they are asking fans to wear black to the game. So that is some of the extra spice. And look, people have been clamoring for this. We had I don't know how many mailbag questions about these things over the years, so show up. You know, you've been begging for this. Blackouts, we want primetime, night game, Saturday, black uniforms, uniforms like we used to have. All of that's here on Saturday. Every single thing that I just mentioned that's been mentioned 1,000 times, they're saying, all right, here's the opportunity. And so fans, here's your opportunity. And team, you've been begging for these types of things, and you want the big stage and all that type of stuff. Like, yeah, here's an opportunity to go and play well on national TV against a team you should beat at home with some cool threads on. Like, and I don't want to hear anything about, like, well, there's too much early. Like, I mean, this is one of those, like, no, man. It's not a game you hyperventilate over. It's a game you get up for and you get fired up to play and not nerve it. Like, the nerves are going to be nerves, but, like, this isn't the weight of the world on your shoulders. Just go play football, man, and go beat a team you're supposed to beat and have fun in front of your home crowd and make it nothing about anything like psychological and overwhelming. And you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That was one thing when they were younger last year. It's like, all right, we're a year past that now. Like, we gotta move on to like just being mature and being able to handle pressure. Mm-hmm. And so this is not extreme pressure this weekend, but there's a little bit of pressure to perform in front of your home crowd, and there should be.
There's a lot of pressure in my eyes. This is a game that you absolutely have to take advantage of.
You have to win it for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they don't win this game, then we're talking about, you know, probably a one or two win season.
Gloves are off next week. Yeah. I don't anticipate that, however. But, no. I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I'm not ruling it out either based on what we've seen, but I'm not expecting it. But, yeah, we'll cross whatever bridge we need to. But, yeah, this is one of those that – you're not like, oh, this is a must win, but it is a must win.
Yeah, it definitely is a must win. I mean, if they want to have any success going forward this year, they're going to have to win this football game. And just to kind of provide some light on kind of what's going on with Air Force right now, their quarterback play has been really bad after having a couple veteran quarterbacks over the last couple years. They have 13 completions on the season for 125 yards, zero touchdowns. Currently completing 38% of their passes throwing the football and have two interceptions. Not good. Not good throwing the ball. Okay, you can say, oh, yeah, but their run game is what they're all about. Very true. Currently, they are averaging a whopping 3.1 yards per carry in matchups against Merrimack and San Jose State. Pretty simple for me. Baylor should not be giving up more than 3 yards per carry. 3 yards per carry is not going to get you a first down, and then Air Force should not be completing more than probably 5 passes in this game, which, again, should lead to Baylor getting off the field in a hurry, creating 3 and outs, creating havoc, potentially creating turnovers. And if this defense has truly taken that big step forward, they should be up for this challenge. Again, this Air Force team has not scored well this year. If Baylor gives up more than 14 points, I frankly would be very disappointed in that. And then on the offensive side, I know Air Force's defense has been pretty good, but where they've been susceptible is in the passing game. This past week, they gave up 262 yards on 17 completions. It's been the explosive plays. You know, that's what cost them against San Jose State. Merrimack didn't have much success really doing anything, but they did run for over four yards per carry. So something to look at there is, you know, kind of Air Force has had struggles against the run in the first game and then struggles against the pass in the second game. A lot to keep an eye on. I think Air Force's defense is probably solid, but I think Baylor's offense desperately needs a good performance, and hopefully their defense can put them in really good situations.
Tell you what, they didn't pay 6-7 figures for their starting quarterback or pay anything for the rest of their entire team. You know, when Aranda had the NIL jab, you might remember a certain program that had a response to that was pretty funny of, we pay players, and Air Force, I believe, responded with, we don't. And that was a nice little little shot back across the bow. And so a bunch of guys who don't play for NIL money, which Aranda's mentioned in like every weekly press conference now, they're going to be rolling into town ready to fight. And they might not be as good as the team you saw 2 years ago, but they're going to be ready to fight. And if Baylor's not ready to fight, then that is a huge, huge red alarm siren going off because this is the type of game you should get up to play and look forward to. Uniforms, night game, cool crowd, like whatever. So, you know, I don't know. Like, check the pulse of this team if they can't get up for this one. Yeah. And, yeah, they should win this football game. They should win it comfortably. Crazier things have happened, obviously, but this isn't the Armed Forces Bowl in the coldest conditions in bowl game history. This is on your home field in September. You should win this game and not leave any doubts about that. So that's how I feel about this game entirely. All right, so there's your Air Force preview. Win this game, or else I don't know. I don't know what to think about the direction. And that's not putting pressure. That's just basic expectations for this football program and where it sits. This should be the no-doubter here. So, all right, let's get into some mailbag questions and answer some other things, and then we'll have whatever time remaining to talk about the Big 12. Billy 21 injury update, who's out, who's back? Jacques Evans?
Jacques Evans,
Jacques Evans, is he back?
I don't know about Jacques Evans yet. I would kind of anticipate him not being back this week. I just feel like if guys are kind of on the fence of being, you know, out or coming back from injury, I don't feel like this is the game that you rush them back for. Personally, that's just kind of where I'm at with it. Dave Randa did mention Bryson Washington as being a guy that's getting close. I kind of feel like he'll play this week, and that's where I'm leaning. Cooper Lands, he said, is dealing with an ankle injury that he suffered in the Utah game. We'll see. Again, if they're on the fence, I don't really expect them to play. Carl Williams didn't play against Utah. That hasn't really been mentioned a ton, but that was a big loss for Baylor going into that game. He had a knee sprain, according to Dave Aranda. It seems like he's trending in the right direction, but again, I just am of the mindset of if they're on the fence about playing this week, they probably save them for the Colorado game. I don't know if I'm missing anyone else, but those are the ones that come to mind.
Scotty B, the Baylor King, who is the X factor on the team that's not a single digit number for the Air Force game?
Ooh,
somebody on the O line.
Yeah, I mean, you could go someone on the O line. I think Alinus Noel in this game, especially if Cooper Lands isn't going to play. I think you need your nose tackle to perform pretty well against Air Force, especially since Air Force is going to try to run right at Baylor. Alinus had his struggles, honestly, against Utah. Had some moments, but needs to perform a little bit better. I think this is a good week for him to kind of get back on track and have a big impact.
Wyatt Smith, what are the top corrections you would like to see this week for offense, defense, for y'all to feel like we are on the right track? Where do you want to start?
I think defensively, not giving up explosives in the passing game. I feel good about their run defense. That's been pretty consistent the first two games, but they should not really give up much to Air Force through the air.
Well, they got totally – this was like the call on the fake to Dejon Stanley was a brilliant freaking call by Kyle Whittingham and company, because Dejon Stanley had the big game in week one. Mm-hmm. Everybody was like, watch Dejon Stanley. And then here they go, and they look like they're about to give it to him on a reverse, and it was just a brilliant play call.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And they wore down Baylor by the end, but let's be honest here, that was in large part because Baylor's offense really wasn't on the field at all to start the game. So, again, I feel pretty good about that, but explosive in the passing game, I'd like to see them not give up much of that, because they did give up some of that against Utah. Offensively, I mean, I'd like to see the pass.
Everything?
Yeah, but for me specifically, the passing game has got to get back on track. That has not been there. It has not been consistent. I need to see them being more efficient throwing the football. Not just big plays deep downfield, but efficiency and creating, as I call them, layups for Daquan Finn and the passing attack. They need to create those layups for this passing game to take a step forward.
Who from each side of the ball will have a dominant performance?
Dominant. Ooh, goodness. Okay, defensively, I'm going to go with Keaton Thomas. I think this is a good game for him. Air Force trying to run the ball a lot. His athleticism against triple option, I think, is going to give them a lot of problems. So I'll go with Keaton there. Offensively, Oh, gosh. It's hard to really pick one person to have a dominant performance. I'll go with Ketron Jackson to get back on track. He created some explosive plays in week one. I think he's going to need to do that this week if this kind of offense is really going to start moving again.
Yeah, he was absent from Saturday, it felt like. Yeah, that would be a good candidate. I can't really predict dominance right now from anybody on this football team. I'll just defer to Grayson there for the sake of time. But, I mean, I think you could just name anybody, and they're all, like, same odds to have that potential, honestly.
It's a lot easier on defense
right now. Not Grant Taft. Did last week's performance, and thank you, Wyatt. Did last week's performance, the top-end Big 12 teams, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, surprise either of you? Should we readjust expectations for those teams, or was it an off week? Appreciate you both.
I mean, I think there's concerns with a number of teams in the Big 12. I mean, like I said, Utah's the only team that's looked close to complete for me.
I said at the very beginning, they can beat every team that's on the schedule remaining, and vice versa. They can get beat by everybody, but you can absolutely beat every team, including Kansas, including Oklahoma State. Both those games are at home. You don't play K-State.
No.
And K-State hasn't looked great. They should have lost to Tulane, and if not for a flag and just a bad play calling at the near the goal line for Tulane, they win that game. So I think my expectations are readjusted that I think Baylor, if they were to get their act together, could be better than expected because the Big 12 is not as tough as expected in terms of like eye to eye how you see teams. Like that's where I readjust. Now they'd have to go do it, but that is something that's kind of like Kansas is not quite as good. K-State's not quite as good. Oklahoma State's not quite as good where I'd say like, oh, that's definitely losses. Like, no, you could actually beat every one of those teams if you play well enough.
Right, and it's just about who gets better quicker. Is it Baylor or is it these teams? Like, who figures it out as the season progresses? And we'll see on that. But there's an opening here for Baylor to win a lot more games than people expected, but there's also an opening for Baylor to struggle again.
Yeah, so I think definitely readjusted expectations a little bit. I don't think it was an off week. I think that's just where everybody is. They're kind of like top 15 to 25 teams, and they're all just sort of jumbled in that area from like 20 to 40 almost, or 15 to 40 with Utah at the top if Cam Rising's healthy. Let's see. Useless Kim Degree. Thank you, not Grant Taft. What is your confidence level for the offense if Sawyer gets to start against Colorado? Do you feel like he has a better connection with guys like Keytron and Howell than DQ does? This wasn't something we mentioned, but Finn went out for a series. Sawyer came in. People were clamoring for him because Finn wasn't playing well. But Finn came back. He was fine ultimately, but what are your thoughts if Sawyer were to get the start in 2 weeks?
I mean, this has been a huge storyline all week. We were talking about what's been the conversation. It's been, oh, well, the backup quarterback, like we've heard talked about for a number of years now. Even going back to 2021 when Gary was the quarterback, a lot of people wanted Blake Shapen to be the quarterback, especially by the end of the year. So this feels like commonplace, really. I think, Sawyer had a great moment last year against West Virginia, and I understand why people are putting a lot of stock in that. But you got to remember, Taquan Finn has also had a lot of moments against really good teams during his time at Toledo. It's not like this guy doesn't have experience or hasn't played. He went on the road to Ohio State. I mean, he has played really good teams in the past and had some success. So just kind of saying that, I do believe that if this offense continues to struggle, you do probably have to look at Sawyer and at least give him a chance. But I also don't want people to overreact to the fact that Baylor just had to play the best defense in the Big 12. And they struggled, like most teams will. I'm confident that if Sawyer plays, I still think they can beat Colorado. I also think if Taquan Finn plays, they could beat Colorado as well. As far as a better connection with Ketron and Hal, I personally don't think you can say that yet. I think that both of them completed a big pass to Ketron Jackson in the first game. Last week, Taquan Finn, against Utah, Taquan Finn hit Hal Presley a couple times, and I don't think Sawyer Robertson found Hal in the first game. So I think it's way too early to say that the connection's better there.
ICT Bear saw some spirited discussion on this board regarding the use of analytics and decision-making in relation to the two-point conversion attempt. Has Aranda publicly stated his in-game philosophy regarding that? Is he following the decision chart to a T, or is there more factors involved there?
I mean, I think that...
I think that he looks at it like everybody else, but like the Northern Illinois coach, there's sometimes you just, right. or no, like I saw Kalani Sitake when they went for it on fourth down a bunch. It wasn't always the analytics telling him to do it. He's like, it's just a feel for the game. Mm-hmm. I think that's how Aranda is it's a feel for the game type of a deal.
He has said he leans into analytics.
No, he definitely does. So yeah. I just don't think he just trusts it implicitly.
Right.
Yeah. He definitely does look into analytics.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of, like you said, gameful a little bit, where he feels like Baylor is in the game, where he feels like they can gain an edge. And I think
how
that's,
the defense is playing, right. like how, yeah.
Now, I don't think it was a good decision to go for two, which is what everyone's referring to right, in the Utah right. game. I felt like that was a bad decision. But I also kind of understand the fact that you're kind of sitting there like, well, are we going to score many points the rest of this game? You know, maybe we give ourselves an opportunity to cut to nine so that if we happen to score a touchdown, all we need is a field goal and we win instead of a tie. But I don't know. That's kind of the mindset that I think was taken there, but I didn't really see a reason for it.
No, I didn't see a reason for it either. So especially after a big play to Cameron like that, yeah. you could have probably done without that and just made it 23-13. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I understand the second guessing of it, but I think for most coaches, it's like you trust it to some extent, but then you ultimately got to go with your gut. And sometimes your gut is right. And sometimes it's wrong, and I think in the case of that 2-point conversion, in hindsight, when it doesn't work, like, yeah, that was the wrong call to make. But appreciate the question, and we'll see if we don't flesh out that answer some more as the season goes along. So appreciate everybody in the mailbag. Those are the questions this week. If you want to jump in, Grayson puts that up, on Mondays, mm-hmm. A thread. Just look on the premium section for that, and you can put your question in there, and we'll answer it on Tuesday's podcast so long as we have time, which we did this week, and we actually have a little bit of time left over. Anything you want to mention news-wise before – it's not a busy week in the Big 12, but anything you want to, I guess, pass along, anything recruiting or anything like that before we dive in?
Not a ton of recruiting stuff. I do expect this Air Force game to be a pretty heavily attended game. It feels like Baylor's kind of, again, put a lot of attention into this game. So I expect that to be an intriguing storyline, of course. Follow along on the premium side of things if you want to see the complete list a little later in the week. But I do think this is a good opportunity, again, for Baylor to put on a good show on the field and have a lot of commits and recruits in the building for the game as well.
Yeah, look, man, wear black to the game. I swear to God, if yeah. I see like some yellowed shirts in the crowd, I mean, just with all the talk for like, 7 years about blackout games, there's finally a blackout game, even though it's not a blackout game, but it's a blackout game. So wear black to the game on Saturday if you're going to the game and just be part of it. I can't say this is a situation where we're going to hear, well, promotions has put the word out there. Yeah. We're putting the word out there, and we're not on the payroll. Like, at least I'm not. You're kind of. So anyways, but like, wear black to the game. This is what you do. I'm looking forward to seeing the uniforms and what kind of festivities there are this weekend. So, all right, let's look at the Big 12 a little bit here. A very interesting game on Thursday night. Arizona State just beat Blake Shapen in Mississippi State and Jeff Lebby in Mississippi State at that as well. Shapen looked like Shapen. Like, he had some plays throughout the game where you're like, that's pretty good. Like, if he does that a bunch, then that'd be great. He also had a bad scoop and score. He's backed up near his own goal line, got hit, tried to make a play going down. Classic Blake Shapen. Yeah. And Cullen Fight picks it up and has one of the better big man touchdowns you'll see in the first couple of weeks of the season. And that was like when Arizona State was rolling. But classic Blake Shapen, like, rallies in the second half to try to make this a game. But they fall short. Arizona State gets the win. Really nice win for Kenny Dillingham over an SEC team. First time they've ever beat an SEC team in that program's history. But then they turn around now and they go to Texas State to play G.J. Kenny and company, who just beat the mess out of UTSA. His mentor, Jeff Traylor, just laid the hands on him. And so not only go to Texas State, but it's on a Thursday night. So just a really unique game for Arizona State coming up. They're feeling good, but they're also walking into a potential, like, trap here. And I don't think it's a trap that you'd be surprised by it, but just like, this is going to be tough to get out of if you're Arizona State, potentially. Right now, they are 1.5-point favorites. They should have the roster advantages, but in the portal era, not as much as you would think, necessarily. So this is a really interesting game. I'm not Mr. Everything's Pro Big 12. Like, I'm not going to do that for everything. Part of me would love to see Texas State win, but they really need Arizona State to win this football game. Like, this would be an understandable loss because Texas State might be a playoff team for all we know.
Yeah.
But you can't lose to Texas State on a Thursday night in San Marcos.
No, I mean, Vegas is even telling you this is a very even matchup. I mean, for it to only be a 1.5-point favorite for Arizona State coming off of beating an SEC school, it's very intriguing. I think Texas State's going to win this game. I know Arizona State is a good team, and they are way better than what I thought they were going to be early in the year. But I do think at some point, maybe the rails are going to come off a little bit. And we saw Wyoming is terrible. So that first week doesn't really matter to me. I think Texas State's pretty good. I think they're going to give Arizona State all they want. And I think the Bobcats are going to win that game.
I mean, Texas State's got a seventh-year quarterback who's on his fourth college football team. Yep. It's pretty ridiculous.
Jordan McLeod.
Yeah. Literally is transferred like every other year. So that's who they're facing off with. 7 years, four teams for Jordan McLeod. And it's worked out well for G.J. Kinney so far. But, yeah, that's a very interesting game. I think I go Arizona State, but and like Cameron Scataboo is going to run all over that mm-hmm. defense. But they're going to have to do some things in the passing game to counteract what Texas State will inevitably get to some extent offensively. They're not going to be shut out by any means. So they're gonna have to have some passing game for the Sun Devils. Also, Friday night, you got Kansas coming off of the loss. They look a little bit worse for wear after getting beat by Illinois. And Jalen Daniels not looking like the future Heisman Trophy winner. He and the Jayhawks back at home hosting a really good UNLV team that's got a coach who you might remember and who is probably going to be back in the P4 sooner rather than later. But UNLV and their 2-0 start, including a win over Houston in the opening weekend, that's going to be a nice little matchup for Lance Leipold and company on a weeknight.
It will be. I'm curious if Jalen Daniels can bounce back. UNLV is going to give them some problems, but ultimately I think Kansas gets back on track and wins this game. But it's going to be close, I think. I think it'll probably be within a touchdown.
Yeah, Barry Odom and the Rebels are pretty good, so I would not be surprised to see this in a close situation. Interesting to see some of the Jeff Grimes talk after the last game. Guess what? Andy Kotelnicki was really good, and losing him was going to be a blow to your team. And it is, even though he didn't have a great week, too, for Penn State. But I do think that matters in terms of this Kansas team in 2024, and you saw some of that last weekend. A weird conference, non-conference matchup because this game was scheduled before the Pac-12 blew up. K-State hosting Arizona, number 14 hosting number 20 on Friday night on Fox. So another Friday night game, Kansas State, 7-point favorites.
I don't really believe in Arizona right now. They've been very shaky to me in many regards. K-State has as well, but I think K-State just getting tested against Tulane might kind of get their mindset right going into this one. I think Kansas State's going to win this game. I think they're more poised in my eyes to maybe take a big step forward this week as opposed to Arizona. I have a lot of questions about offensively and defensively, to be honest.
Well, Arizona was really good on offense in week one with Tetero McMillan having a huge game, and then he did nothing in the last game. And when he did nothing, nobody else could do anything on offense. So it was a defensive game. So they've had an offensive game and a defensive game. And I don't know who shows up in week three, but in Manhattan, I'll go with Kansas State, even though they have questions of their own. But that is an interesting game for sure with it being a top 25 matchup. As far as other notable games, like Miami of Ohio could definitely beat Cincinnati if they're not careful. That's a rivalry. Cincinnati had a demoralizing loss, letting the game against Pittsburgh slip from their fingertips. Speaking of Pittsburgh, they'll host West Virginia. That's an interesting ACC versus Big 12 matchup in Pittsburgh. We'll see if the Mountaineers can't get a little measure of revenge for the Bearcats in that one and get another win over the ACC in the season totals. Let's see, Colorado at Colorado State, and their tune-up before hosting the Bears next week in Boulder in what is going to be a night game based on the release this week. But another interesting game, TCU, UCF, 6:30 on Fox on Saturday. TCU less than point favorites, like 0.5 favorites in
the latest spread. So that's very interesting. You don't see that very often, that small of a spread, 0.5, but that's what they had here. But yeah, KJ Jefferson and company rolling into Fort Worth, that rushing attack ought to be interesting.
The spreads this week are crazy. There's a lot of really close ones in the Big 12. Yeah, TCU versus UCF is going to be fun. I don't even know which way I'm leaning. There's so many questions about both of these teams
right now. I'm going Frogs here.
You're
going
to go Frogs? Yeah. I just have a feeling that UCF's kind of good. I think UCF's going to win this game, but it's going to be close, really, really close. I think it'll be a fun one.
I think TCU's going to force them to throw the ball, and yeah. I think that could get really interesting with KJ Jefferson. If they can force them to throw the ball, like, they got to do that first, but their defense looks better. That's going to be a good matchup, though. That'll be really interesting. But and that is definitely one of the better games on a slate that was pretty jam-packed last weekend. It's not so much this weekend. A lot of games you'd expect to win.
This is upset weekend. This feels like there's a lot of games on here where I'm kind of glancing at them and have some concerns about the Big 12 team. Like, I mean, is Chandler Morris going to go into Lubbock and score 50 points?
Well, I was going to mention that one next, actually. The other ones, I'm scanning, and I don't think anything else is really worth talking about. All those other games, Big 12 squads should win. I do think, like I mentioned, Miami, Ohio, and Cincinnati. That's one to at least glance at. But, yeah, the other one in West Virginia, Pitt's obviously a good game. But
I like West Virginia there. I think they're going to take care of business.
I think they probably should, although Eli Holstein played pretty well at times for Pitt last week in that comeback. So we'll see if that doesn't propel them and give them some momentum. But West Virginia is still favored on the road, and I do think they should win that game. But, yeah, that leaves, in terms of just interest coming out of last weekend, Texas Tech, after just getting mollywopped by John Mateer and Washington State last week, giving up nearly 200 yards to the Texas native on the ground, the fun Cougars quarterback ran wild on Joey McGuire's defense, and they had no Taj Brooks, and it all added up to a really bad night and a blowout loss. And so they're at home at 11 a.m. hosting Chandler Morris and North Texas, and right now they are nearly 10-point favorites, so nobody overreacting too much. But yeah, it's not so great in Lubbock after that result last weekend and the game prior, the opener, where they were very fortunate to win that one, and they are very close to being 0-2 rather than 1-1.
Well, Tech opened as 11.5-point favorites, and it's since dropped to 9.5. There's a lot of concerns here. Chandler Morris has thrown for 737 yards through their first two games, so he's probably going to throw for 350 at least against Tech based on what we've seen so far. And if he does that, I feel like North Texas is going to score in the 30s, so we'll see if Tech can outscore him. But it's going to be a fun little shootout, I think. I like what I've seen from North Texas offensively, and Tech at some points offensively has looked good. They really need Taj Brooks back, though.
Yeah, they need Taj Brooks, and I will say it's fun to get five-star wide receivers, but when you're not seeing them play a lot, then it turns into a hassle when you have to answer questions about them
every week,
every single week, about where's Micah Hudson, where's Micah Hudson, why isn't Micah Hudson playing? And you have to answer, and Joey's latest answer was kind of interesting because it made it sound like, well, it's kind of Micah Hudson's fault he's not playing.
He's behind. They have a few guys. And
yeah, they do,
them.
But he's also a five-star wide receiver, so like he should be able to beat out Coy Eakin, as good as Coy Eakin might be. So that's the conversation and happening now in Lubbock is exactly what we just did for the last 30 seconds.
Right.
And so, yeah, you barely beat ACU, and then you get blown out against Washington State. That's what happens. And so, yeah, that's a situation to definitely monitor moving forward. And that could get really interesting if they have an ACU-like performance against North Texas, who does have Chandler Morris throwing the ball pretty well, as you mentioned. So there you go. There's a few things from the conference weekend. That ought to be a really interesting Friday night with the Kansas UNLV and the Kansas State-Arizona games. But that Thursday night, Arizona State-Texas State, like those Thursday-Friday games might be better than the entire Saturday slate, honestly, in terms of interest level and competitiveness. So should be a fun weekend as we kind of wind down this non-conference and get that final hurrah before conference play begins in full. So exciting weekend. Any thoughts before we head on out of here, Grayson?
Not too many. Just be sure to check out the Sikkim 365 premium side of things. We have so much content, so many reactions to games, previews, anything you could possibly want about the upcoming stuff going on with Baylor football. Be sure to check that out on the premium side. And of course, be sure to check out 365 Sports for all your Big 12 coverage, 3 to 6 on YouTube, Monday through Friday.
Yep, I do appreciate it. Hit that like and subscribe button. And, again, we'll be Tuesdays at 11 a.m. flat moving forward rather than 11:15. So just a slight change there for those who may try to catch it live on Tuesdays on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page. So 15 minutes earlier throughout the rest of the season. And next week we'll be talking about what should be a win over Air Force and what those anthracite uniforms look like and whatever else comes with all of that. But until then, we do appreciate your time. Appreciate those who threw some questions in the mailbag and just everybody who's out there listening. Thanks to Garrett Ross behind the scenes as well. And for Grayson Grunhafer, I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.